So I went on a family trip to Boston, and I thought it would be way legit if I could get an interview with the founder and owner of Bridge Nine Records, which magically worked out. Well, not too magically, but so stoked that it ended up working. And yeah, so little background on Bridge Nine. It started in 1995, and since then it has had more than 100 releases, which is huge. And a lot of those releases belong to a few of my favorite bands, like Cruel Hand, Polar Bear Club, Ceremony, Death Threat, Have Heart, Terror, and Ruiner. So yeah, definitely a whole bunch of amazing musicians signed to that label. And here is my interview with Chris Wren, the founder and owner of Bridge Nine Records. I hope you guys enjoy it. First question I'm going to ask you is, what was your musical upbringing like when you were younger?
I was always drawn to heavy music. It's funny, I actually told the story recently, but yeah, the first cassette that I ever had, like the first time I had my own music I could go buy and listen to whenever I wanted to, was Motley Crue's Girls, Girls, Girls.
And, I love Motley Crue.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, I don't even know where, maybe I saw like a video on MTV or something when I was, because I was in like fifth grade when that came out. And, you know, just went, got that, listened to it a bunch. And, you know, I used to go down to the local, there was a place called Town Pharmacy. It was like a little pharmacy down the street from my house. And I used to go and look at all the, like, the metal magazines that they had back then. And just look for stuff with Motley Crue. And by looking at those magazines, was exposed to, you know, other kind of heavy bands. So that's where it started. And then it started getting more into, like, death metal and, like, Obituary and Deicide and stuff like that. And then, you know, because I skated, I was exposed to a lot of hardcore bands. Mm-hmm. So
Motley Crue is definitely, like, one of the first bands I started listening to. Like, Nikki Sixx is, like, the reason why I play bass. I was like, he plays bass, he's cool, I want to play bass.
Nice.
Is there, like, a specific moment that you got captured by hardcore, or, like, fell in love with it?
I don't know. I think when I was in high school, like, I would go to shows, and, you know, all my friends went to shows, and, you know, I felt like there was more of a community feeling, you know? Like, it was more of, like, you know, like, when I first started listening to heavy music, I would go to, like, you know, metal shows, and it'd be, like, at, like, you know, a theme park or, like, at some, like, big, you know, like, stadium.
Huge stadium.
Yeah, and it was more of something where you felt like you were just a spectator and you were paying $25 for a t-shirt, you know, and you know, I would go to hardcore shows and it was more of, like, a community experience. So it, you know, I think I was just drawn more to that. And I remember I actually specifically in 1992 said, I'm not going to listen to metal anymore. And I was only going to listen to hardcore. And just because of that, because of that experience.
Yeah, my first hardcore experience was, like, the funniest thing ever. Me and my friend, we were 14, we're, like, tiny little people. She's like, yeah, like, this one local band is playing a show, you have to come with me. So we go to, like, the sketchiest part of town. We're standing in the corner of this small room. It was not too much bigger than, like, this office. And everyone was just killing each other, and then after, like, all the bands were chilling, and I was like, this is the weirdest but coolest thing I've ever experienced in my life, and just, like, meeting people I never thought I'd be able to meet, just, like, local people that I'd always kind of, like, seen from afar but never realized I could be a part of it. It was pretty cool. But
yeah, I mean, that was similar to my first experience. Yeah. I remember going to shows when I was probably about 15, and kids, like, just destroying each other at the show, and me literally, you know, little 15-year-old kid, like, with my back against the wall, like, and I couldn't possibly push further into the wall just trying to avoid, you know, getting hit. But, I mean, I think some of that, that's obviously a foreign experience to a 15-year-old kid or, like, a teenage kid. So I think it's part of what, you know, draws kids into it. Because, like, wow, this is crazy. This is, like, something that I have never experienced.
Mm-hmm. It's, like, so intense and just, I don't know, amazing. So when you were younger, what did you see yourself doing career-wise? Like, did you ever imagine that you'd have a career within music?
No, not at all. I was never musically inclined. I mean, I think I took saxophone for a week and quit that. I took drums for a couple weeks and quit that. Like, I was never really into it. I mean, I was always the kid in my class that was the artist, you know, that would always draw. And so I was really big into art and illustration and stuff. And I went to school specifically for fine arts, you know, so I never really actually, even through college, didn't do anything related to business or music business. It was just something that, you know, when I started the label, it was just something to do with friends, you know, like, all my friends were in bands. I was, like, the odd man out, so I figured, you know, if I could at least try and put out a 7-inch record, you know, with some of my friends' bands, then maybe I'd be able to contribute, you know, do something, play a part, you know, of you know, I guess the scene and contribute. And, you know, fortunately, it worked, you mm-hmm. know. But I never had any, you know, ideas of starting a label. Like, just originally, it was just to try and put out a record.
So, like, you said you went to, like, art school, but how important do you think it is for, like, today people to have a college degree if they want to work in the music industry, if important at all?
I don't think it's important at all. I think there's some people that need that structure, and I'm sure actually most people need that structure. So, you know, it's, in that respect, it's good. But for me, I mean, you know, with the exception of taking over a lot of the art-related responsibilities of the label, I didn't need my degree to start my business, mm-hmm. you know, and if anything, you know, it's trial and error. It's, you know, networking. It's, you know, just meeting people and, you know, just building off of that. So while I think college is important because it takes kids that have very little focus, you know, with me, I had like attention deficit disorder, you know, in high school, and like, I was very hyperactive. And, you know, I think going to college allowed me to, you know, kind of focus my energy, and it also allowed me to, you know, work on projects and, you know, work on assignments and get the structure that I needed to ultimately, you know, be able to start a business.
That's pretty cool. So. Yeah, because it's like everyone that I've talked to, like I've met people who go to like USC, pay $55,000 a year for their like music business degree, and it's like I've always wondered if it's actually like worth to put that much like into yeah. it, because I hear like both sides of the stories. Like some people are like, yeah, you have to go to school, you have to do this, this, and this, like no one will take you seriously. And then like there's other people who are like, yeah, I just met a few people and now I'm doing this. So it's like extreme opposites.
Yeah, I mean, obviously every person has probably a different story. Yeah. But you know, with me, I mean, you know, I graduated from school with a bachelor's of fine arts degree. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I did sculpture and painting and you know, stuff like that when I was in school, stuff that for the most part hasn't really aided me in building my business. Mm-hmm. You know, certainly, I mean, it's easier for me because I do all the ads, I do a lot of the graphic design, so like stuff like that, you know, makes it easier because I can do it in-house and I don't have to pay someone to do yeah. it. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, as long as you are willing to work hard, you know, like, I mean, we've had people that have interned here that aren't necessarily in school, they just mm-hmm. want to learn and they just want to meet people. So, you know, as long as you're willing to work hard and, you know, network and learn from whatever experiences you have, then, you know, that can be more important than school. My college degree has never opened any, like the degree itself has never opened any doors for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never had to go and say, hey, you know, I have this fine arts degree, yeah. you know, what jobs can you offer me? You know, because I started the label my second year of college. So like, you know, I had a couple odd jobs when I got out of school, but for the most part, I just focused on the record label. So, you know, it was never like I had to, you know, shop it around and say, hey, you know, give me this job. Yeah. You know?
When you, like, look for bands to sign, what is, like, the specific thing you look for, if there really is a specific thing? And, like, how do you kind of figure out if they're going to be successful or not?
I mean, there's no guarantee. Set formula. Yeah. I mean, you know, the first thing we want is we want a band that we like.
Yeah.
You know, we want a band that we're excited about, that we think, you know, musically reflects what the label's all about, ethically, you know, reflects mm-hmm. what the label's all about. But we also want a band that's willing to tour, you know, because, I mean, the bands that tour are the bands that get a lot of opportunities, that, you know, they grow, you
get
know.
Get their name out there.
Exactly. You know, like, so, yeah, literally, I think it's just those three things. You know, we want a band that we really like musically, that we agree with ethically, you know, and then also is willing to just work really hard. I mean, we'll work as hard as the band's willing to work. And, you know, we've only got so many resources to give so many opportunities to mm-hmm. only, you know, so many bands. So, you know, we want to work with bands that are going to really just drop everything and tour.
What bands at the moment do you think will have a large impact on the hardcore scene in the next few years?
You know, that's a good question. You know, I mean, it's that's the thing. Like, you know, it's hindsight's 2020. You know, yeah. like, you know, when we were working with a band like American Nightmare, you know, we never realized how much influence they would have, you
that's
know,
true.
over the years. I mean, they were just doing their own thing at the time, but then all of a sudden you have all these bands that are kind of co-opting their style, co-opting their sound, you know, their approach to lyrics. you know, and then, you know, a few years later, you know, we have a band like Have Heart, like I just referenced, and, you know, there, it's hard to realize how many people they touch, you know,
yeah.
in terms of, you know, their lyrical content and their, you know, their just hardworking ethic. And then all those bands that are influenced because of them. So it's difficult. I mean, I like, you know, I like to think that this band would, you know, go someplace and become
yeah.
influential and whatnot, but, you know, it's hard to guess.
Yeah. No, it's crazy because it's like everyone that I know who listens to hardcore, like one of the top bands that they list in their favorite bands is Have Heart.
Yeah.
And just, I think that's sick.
Like, they, you know, they influence so many people and it's such a good way. You know, like we have, you know, we've put out almost 150
yeah.
albums, you know, over the last 15 years, but there's only a handful of bands that have the same, you know, connection to kids as Have Heart. And it's just an incredible, you know, thing that band had. You know, I mean, we look at a band like Verse, you know, they were, you know, all signs said this band was going to be huge, you know, and you know, next thing you know, they internally just fall apart
yeah.
and break up. But I mean, that band was going to be just as big, you know, like they had, you know, it was crazy, like the amount of opportunities they had and, you know, the amount of kids that were into that band and, you know, how kids related to their lyrics. But then the next thing you know, they just fall apart.
But yeah, so how do you think the role of record labels are going to change in the next few years?
I think, you know, the main thing that a record label does, you know, there's been a lot of people saying like, oh, well, you can have your own online store now. You can, you know, record your music by yourself. Like, you don't need a record label.
Mm-hmm.
And for bands that have the resources to do that stuff on their own, that's absolutely, you know, that could be true. But I think one of the things that a label, the biggest part that a label brings to the table is, you know, our history, you know, our track record, you know, like, you know, Bridge Nine has, like I said, 15 years, you know, worth of relationships.
Yeah.
You know, we've got, you know, all sorts of opportunities because of our, you know, our long history that we can bring to the table with a band, you know. And besides that, you know, we act as, like, I guess, the, for lack of a better reference, the main investor in a band, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we take on the responsibility of putting them in the studio so the band doesn't have to worry about it. You know, we help them out when they're on tour. We market and push their record, you know, so that they don't necessarily have to start from scratch.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, we also bring an audience, you know. I mean, you know, for a label like Bridge Nine, I mean, you know, we've got a lot of different bands, but we also have, you know, like kind of our, like our audience.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we sign a new band, you know, kids check it out. So it definitely helps, you know, when we find somebody that's new and up and coming, you know, we can bring a lot to the table. You know, when we've got a band that, you know, is brand new, that's never left the United States, if we sign them, you know, booking agents in Australia, people
yeah.
in Japan will say, hey, you know, we should check this band out because they're on Bridge Nine now. So, you know, one of the things that we, you know, definitely bring is, you know, more opportunities for touring. So if a band wants to, you know, go to Europe, if they want to go to South America, you know, we've been sending bands there, you know, a couple times a year for a long time. So, you know, it just makes the whole process easier.
How do you, like, what is the most important thing a band can do to be noticed by a record label, in your opinion?
I think if with our experience, you know, we've only signed maybe one or two bands off of demos.
Okay.
You know, for the most part, it's referrals from our own bands. You know, like an example I've used before was when American Nightmare when they were first touring, you know, across the country, they said, you know, one of the guys in the band said that every time they played in the Northwest, they would play with this band Champion. And, you know, they were just a local band at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they got a great, you know, reaction. You know, the guys in American Nightmare liked them, you know, and that spoke more than 1,000 mailed in demos, you know, or, you know, 10,000 plays on, you know, MySpace or whatever. So, like, you know, that got my attention. You know, I checked out their demo, and when they came out to the East Coast, you know, checked them out,
yeah.
and we signed. You know, a lot of the bands that we deal with, you know, for the most part, we can trace them back through relationships with our existing bands and bands that we've worked with in the past.
That's
so
cool.
You know, it's like I said, you know, we only have so many resources in any given year that we can, you know, to work with a band on, and you know, so we have to be really, you know, picky about like who we work with. And you know, when somebody from one of your existing bands, like Have Heart, you know, said, hey, you absolutely need to check out, you know, Pat from Have Heart said you need to check out Foundation and Mother of Mercy. You know, and those are two bands that I think have a lot of potential, and a lot of the reason why we were willing to go with them and not other bands was because Pat believed so much in them. So it helped open that door.
Yeah. How do you feel about MySpace within, like, the whole music industry, music scene?
I mean, it's, I think it was a good tool to be able to access bands' music quickly and easily. I mean, even now, like, if I want to hear something from somebody,
yeah,
you know, I can just Google search their name, the band, in MySpace, it pops up.
First one.
Click on it, you can hear a couple songs. Like, it's definitely convenient and easy.
Do you have any, like, negative opinions over MySpace?
I think MySpace is a great tool, and things like that are, you know, like, platforms like that are great tools for bands, but it makes it, it's bands like the path of least resistance. You know, they like whatever's easiest, and, you know, setting up a MySpace page is easy and quick, so I think a lot of people jumped on that, you know, when they used to have their own websites, you know, and having your own website's a really, really important thing, because MySpace is a good example. It was, you know, the hottest thing on the internet for a while, and now, like, its best days are behind it. And a lot of people put all their stock into their MySpace pages, neglected their own websites, you know, and now MySpace is worth less than it used to be. You know, it's for a band and you know, from a, like, a promotional, you know, I guess, perspective. So a lot of bands that used to have websites lost them because they just didn't renew them, or they got, you know, some squatter now has it. So, like, they lost their, you know, their identity, and their identity is now owned and advertised through, like, corporation, you know, but it was easy. They didn't have to pay the $12 a year, you know, for the website name, and they didn't have to pay, you know, to host it. You know, they could just press a couple buttons and have, like, their own MySpace page. But the problem is that there's a trade-off, and, you know, for that convenience and that ease, you now no longer have, like, full control over your identity.
What do you think is, like, the biggest mistake that a band can make, like, a new band can make?
Probably just, I don't know, underestimating how hard they have to work to actually be able to do anything.
Yeah,
I mean, like, bands need to tour, they need to, you know, promote themselves, they need to work really hard, and I think a lot of bands, you know, they think that it's as easy as setting up a MySpace page and, you know, get, you know, trolling for a bunch of for friends on it, and then, like, it's, I don't know, I think they have to actually be out on the road, you know, and pushing themselves.
Last question. What advice do you have for someone who's just starting on their career in the music industry?
Like I said before, networking is, you know, one of the best things you can do. You know, it's really, you know, you need to get out there, meet people, establish some sort of value for yourself, and be able to help people out, you know, and then reciprocate, you know. I think getting an internship is a great opportunity. Like I said, we've had tons of kids that have done internships at Bridge 9, and, you know, it allows, you know, a kid to network. It allows kids to meet people at labels, meet bands. You know, when I first moved to Boston, I knew very few people. So I did a monthly fanzine newsletter, and it was just something that interviewed bands in the area. It wasn't particular to just hardcore. Like, I interviewed metal bands. I interviewed, you know, indie rock bands. But every month I did something. And so I got to meet a ton of people that way. So that when Bridge 9 was first starting to get off the ground, I had a lot of people that I had helped out. You know, like, I gave them interviews. I helped promote them on some level, even if it was a small, like, little newsletter kind of fans. But it was a way to help me put myself out there, meet people that were actually doing things in the scene, and then, you know, build relationships.
Those who get out and take your pain, the world will fade.
So all the songs that you're going to be listening to, and by all of them, I mean three. You've only listened to two now, but they're releases off of, or new releases off of Bridge 9. And the last song you listened to was The Red, White, and Blues by Defeater. And the first song was Cruel Hand by, believe it or not, the band Cruel Hand. Crazy, I know. Definitely a creative name. I love Cruel Hand, so it doesn't matter. And last song I'm going to be playing for you guys before the podcast ends is Living Saints by Polar Bear Club. Hope you love it, because I do. And here it is.
And fall and don't reminisce. See, it's just not.